In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. We continued the discussion with guest Tom Montauk about what may be going on at the quantum level of physics when our intention and emotion interface with reality. The work of Neville Goddard is used as a context and frame for practical application in this interview. We'll also hear parts of a presentation by Goddard and begin with his talk about thanksgiving and gratitude that, quote, breaks the tension between desire and fulfillment. Neville Goddard was a British Barbadian born in the West Indies in 1905. He was a writer, speaker, and mystic. He moved to New York City at age 17 to study drama in 1922. He began as a dancer at the Hippodrome in 1925. A few years later, it's documented, he was mentored by an Ethiopian Jew named Abdullah in New York. Although some suggest his mentor was a composite similar to Carlos Castaneda's Don Juan Matus. We also talk about how anxiety vanishes when in full practice of inhabiting the present moment while doing the exercise. Imagine the quality and composure of a population naturally embodying the present moment in the wish-fulfilled state of full creation mode. When there's no blood in the water, this human community likely falls off the radar of ancient parasites. However, it's important to factor in the possible historic inception of etheric parasite plagues amid the weakened spiritual state of those consuming fermented beverages. Human emotions in your body, imagination, and intention are designed to interface with the quantum level reality and not so much with the silicon, glass, and metal artificial intelligence machine. Add in here Dr. Kahili King's assertion in how the body also holds memory of not only your life experiences, but ancestral genetic memory. Our guest, Tom Montauk, recently wrote a related article titled, How Can I Feel Myself to Be One with the Infinite Creator? Tom is a longtime researcher of fringe topics and draws on his scientific background in physics and engineering to examine the mysteries of reality. His website, Montauk.net, Montalk.net, covers 30 years of research into spiritual awakening, synchronicity, and the hidden mechanics of reality. This is the second part of the interview with Tom Montauk, and at this point we're going right into another part of Goddard's presentation. In this part, he notes the spiritual wisdom of gratitude and inner thanksgiving. He talks about feeling gratitude not only for what's coming, but for what has already arrived in your imaginative state. Goddard says, gratitude, quote, pulls the invisible into the visible and bridges the gap between spirit and matter. This allows life to reshape itself into the mirror state, reflecting back who you are being. And I was thinking this also connects into the scarcity psyop, that your physical presence imposes a negative value to the natural world so much that your consumption must be monitored because it's a liability to the health of the environment. This failed long-term psyop is supported by a structure of limited thinking and zero creativity. A friend recently said to me, left alone, humans would create an opulent world. We go now to hear part of Goddard's presentation. Let's have a listen.
Gratitude in its most sacred form is not a reaction to what has already occurred. It is a declaration of trust in what is yet unseen. Most people wait for the gift before they say thank you. They wait for the breakthrough before they celebrate. They wait for the doors to open before they believe they are favored. But when you understand the spiritual laws that govern this life, you come to see that gratitude is not meant to follow the miracle. It is meant to create it. It is not a reward for blessings received, but a force that pulls those blessings into your life. When you begin to express gratitude in advance, you are not being naive, you are being spiritually intelligent. You are stepping into alignment with the reality that already exists in the unseen realm. And by your thanks, you are calling it forth. To thank God, the universe, life itself, before there is any sign of movement, is to say, I believe in what I cannot yet see. It is an act of courage, a demonstration of faith, and an intimate acknowledgement that reality begins not with evidence, but with belief. This kind of gratitude is magnetic. It does not beg. It does not plead. It claims. It embodies. It stands firm in the storm and whispers thank you, even when nothing has changed on the outside, because something has already shifted on the inside. The moment gratitude is felt, the energy of lack dissolves, the energy of waiting disappears. You are no longer longing, you are receiving. You are no longer doubting, you are affirming. There is something divine about walking through life with a grateful heart before the answers come. It is the behavior of those who know the truth behind appearances. They are not fooled by delay. They are not discouraged by silence. They understand that just because they have not yet touched it with their hands doesn't mean it is not already theirs. They speak to their circumstances with assurance. They look at closed doors and say, thank you, because this is part of the path I cannot yet see. They feel joy in advance. They rejoice, not because of the world, but despite it. And that joy becomes a signal, a spiritual frequency that draws matching experiences into form. When you begin to live this way, people will not understand you. They will question your optimism. They will say, why are you so sure? You don't have it yet. But what they do not realize is that you do have it within. And the inner world always precedes the outer. Gratitude in advance is the sign that you already possess the thing you desire in consciousness. It is the seed you plant and water with belief. And as you continue to give thanks for what is unseen, it must appear. The laws of the universe demand it. Life cannot withhold what you have already claimed in faith. It cannot contradict the truth you embody. This is why gratitude is so much more than politeness. It is power. It is the vibration of completion. It says it is done even when others only see the beginning. It is the secret of those who live in alignment with divine intelligence. They do not need to know the how. They do not need to control the path. They simply give thanks as if everything has already been orchestrated perfectly. And in that surrender, they find peace. Because gratitude softens resistance. It breaks the tension between desire and fulfillment. It takes you out of the energy of striving and into the energy of receiving. And once you are in the receiving state, all things begin to move toward you, not by force, but by grace. Imagine waking up each day and thanking God for things you've only dreamed of. Imagine walking through your day as if your prayers had already been answered. Imagine writing down your goals and instead of pleading for them, simply saying, Thank you, Father, for this reality now made visible. That kind of mindset opens gates. It dissolves worry. It silences the inner critic. Because you are no longer trying to get something, you are living in the energy of already having it. That shift changes the way you speak, the way you walk, the way you respond to the world around you. You radiate peace. You carry an unspoken confidence, not arrogance, and life responds. Circumstances bend. People show up. Ideas are born. Solutions appear. Because you are no longer sending out the signal of desperation, you are sending out the frequency of fulfillment. And like attracts Mike. The world must mirror back what you are consistently emitting. This is not emotional manipulation, it is spiritual principle. Gratitude in advance is the language of creation. It tells the unseen realm, I trust you. It tells your body, we are safe. It tells your mind there is no reason to fear. And with that, you step into a dimension of peace that no external condition can shake. Even in the face of contradiction, gratitude is the anchor. When nothing makes sense, when delays stretch on, when doors seem shut tight, gratitude is the light that keeps you aligned with the truth. It refuses to surrender to appearances. It sees through them. It knows that everything happening now is only temporary. But what is real is eternal and unshaken. And as you continue to give thanks, as you bless the process, the path reveals itself step by step, piece by piece. And when the manifestation arrives, when the dream unfolds and the door opens, it will feel familiar. Not because you've been there before in the physical, but because you've already visited it 1,000 times in your heart. You've already walked those halls in your imagination. You've already breathed in the air of that new reality. And every time you gave thanks, you brought it closer until it could no longer remain unseen. This is the quiet power of gratitude in advance. It works in silence. It moves mountains that eyes cannot see. It prepares your heart to receive what your mind still questions. It bridges the gap between faith and form. And every time you say thank you, even in the absence of visible proof, you are proving to the universe that you are ready, that you trust, that you are aligned, that you believe the best is not only possible, and from that place, all things are possible. Your state of being is not just how you feel in a given moment. It is the silent force that shapes the world around you. It is the vibration you carry, the invisible energy that you bring into every situation, every room, every interaction. While most people are obsessed with the external, trying to fix circumstances, manage outcomes, or control what others do, the wise understand that everything begins within. Your state draws your circumstances.
Tom, I've noticed by holding the wish-fulfilled states of being that when the occasional thought of anxiety and fear arise, their foreign status is obvious. It's easily recognized and uprooted or dismissed. You mentioned the work of past guest Jerry Marzinski. He worked with schizophrenics and revealed the voices aren't hallucinations, but actual entities feeding off the patient's negative emotional state. I suspect the human adversary, such as the composite corporate media narrative or the etheric parasite Marzinski mentions, would benefit having people to be pining about something in the past or worried about future events. It's a challenging spiritual exercise and discipline, but when mastered, in my opinion, being in the present moment would dispel low-level anxiety and possibly etheric parasites. Pining about something in the past, such as a relationship or wishing you could undo a past action, will take you out of fully being in the present. Worrying about the future pulls you out of the present moment, that state of being needed to embody the wish-fulfilled state. Tom, would you please comment on the lack of traction anxiety and fear have on a person when holding a state of being in that present moment? And who benefits when people are stuck in the past or worry about the unfolding of future events?
So as to the question of who benefits from it, it kind of circles back to what I mentioned in my last reply, which is that we're talking about the dark powers of this world, including the thought forms, including dark occult masters. Even if we talk in terms of ufology, there are certain non-human beings that we might consider aliens that feed on our emotional / life force energy. So that's sort of the milieu that we're talking about here. But regarding the past and the future and how that can benefit them, well, yeah, of course, if you are hung up on the past due to major regrets or pining for some event that you wish could have been different, or you're focused too much on the future in an unfulfilled state, those two things, they both lead to suffering. And suffering generates emotional energy, and that emotional energy goes where your attention goes. So there are beings out there, including thought forms, that will lap it up and get stronger as a result. Now, of course, the past and the future in themselves are not problems. It is more what past, what future, and how you feel or think about it. That is where the issue arises. Because Goddard himself, he says, well, if you want to focus on the past, you can reimagine the past as the way you wish it would have gone, but you focus on it as if it were the fact right now in the present. Okay, as if you had jumped timelines, and in the present, you're kind of reminiscing about the past, which is actually different from the one that you came from the other timeline. So that particular method, which I think he calls revisioning, that method is also quite effective for manifesting reality. Because when you revision the past, what that does is it changes the patterns, the quantum patterns in the present, so that you start attracting a different probable future. Now, he mentioned some amusing examples of people that have done that. And if you ever research his work and like what he says about that, those anecdotes are quite amusing. And they're a little bit too long for me to get into. But the point is, yeah, you can think about the past, you can think about the future, but make sure that you always re-anchor it back into the present. Because the present is the fulcrum where your action is most effective. It is the eye of the storm, the place of calmness. It is where you can act, you know, it is where you have your power. So in the end, no matter how much you think about the future or the past, in the end, you must return to the present, because that is where the power is, either in the form of the imagination techniques that Goddard talks about, or in the form of physical action, because you can't act in the future, can't act in the past, you can only act now, right? So people who are only ever thinking about the future or the past, not only do they get hung up on shames and regrets and resentments or things that they wish they could have in the future, but, you know, they have anxiety over whether it'll happen or not, or futures that they fear, right? You don't only get hung up on that, but you also become disempowered because you're never actually acting in the present, whether metaphysically or physically.
Tom, I didn't know that Neville Goddard was using that technique of revising a past event, because I was going to mention the author I mentioned earlier, Dr. Serge Kahale King, author of Instant Healing and many other books, including Earth Energies. Dr. King suggests a similar technique in one of his chapters, where you would attain a meditative state, retrieve a traumatic past event, and reimagine it as positive. But now learning that because you're in the present moment, that reimagined positive memory activates the quantum field to reflect positive events into your life. I didn't know that, so I appreciate you pointing that out. Goddard says something very interesting, quote, "Everything you desire is already yours the moment you claim it in consciousness. It's immediate." That reminds me of the premise of the book Instant Healing, which is the body wants to heal immediately, and our conscious and subconscious mind keep it from healing at that rate. The mind is holding on to trauma or has been programmed to believe certain conditions take X amount of days, months, or years to heal, which I might guess 99% of the time is not the case. Back to Goddard, he said, simply by having a desire, that desire at that moment begins to come into reality. We're going to go now to hear another part of Neville Goddard's presentation, and we'll come back on the other side of this with our guest, Tom Montauk. Let's have a listen.
While action is important, it is secondary to identity. If your self-concept is one of lack, no amount of external action will create lasting wealth. You may experience temporary financial success, but you will always return to the level of abundance that matches your internal belief system. This is why many people who suddenly come into wealth, whether through a windfall, a promotion, or an unexpected opportunity, often lose it just as quickly. Their self-concept has not caught up with their new financial reality, so they unconsciously return to a familiar state of struggle. The key to lasting financial transformation is to reprogram your self-concepts. Instead of seeing yourself as someone who is trying to become wealthy, begin to see yourself as someone who already is. This does not mean reckless spending or pretending to have money you do not have. It means embodying the energy of wealth in your thoughts, emotions, and decisions. It means asking yourself, how would a wealthy person think? How would they act? How would they make decisions, and then aligning your behavior with that mindset. A wealthy person does not stress over minor expenses. They do not constantly check their bank account in fear. They do not operate from a place of desperation or scarcity. Instead, they move through life with confidence, knowing that money flows to them effortlessly. They trust in their ability to create, receive, and manage wealth. They do not operate from fear. They operate from certainty. You must begin to embody this same certainty. Start small. Practice making financial decisions from a place of trust rather than fear. When you spend money, do so with confidence, knowing that more will come. When you receive money, express gratitude rather than anxiety. When opportunities arise, take them with the belief that you are worthy of financial success. The more you align with the identity of wealth, the more your external reality will shift to reflect it. Your words also play a powerful role in shaping your financial self-concept. Many people reinforce a poverty identity by the way they speak. They say things like, I can't afford that, money is tight, I'm broke, or I never have enough. These statements may seem harmless, but they are powerful affirmations that reinforce financial lack. Every time you say these words, you are instructing your subconscious mind to keep you in a state of limitation. Instead of speaking from lack, begin to speak from abundance. Replace statements like, I can't afford it, with, I am choosing to prioritize other things right now. Replace, money is tight, with, money is always flowing to me. Replace, I'm broke, with, I am on my way to financial freedom. The words you speak shape the reality you experience. Choose words that align with the wealth you wish to embody. Another key aspect of shifting your financial self-concept is your environment. The people, places, and experiences you surround yourself with influence the way you see yourself. If you're constantly around people who struggle financially, who complain about money, who reinforce scarcity, it will be difficult to shift your identity. You must begin to immerse yourself in environments that reflect the wealth you want to embody. The truth is, money does not respond to force. It responds to alignment. When you embody the state of wealth, when you truly feel abundant before the evidence appears, money begins to flow effortlessly into your life. Most people are unaware that their relationship with money is dictated by the energy they hold around it. If they see money as something difficult to obtain, something scarce, something that only comes through struggle, they create an energetic barrier that repels it. They do not realize that their beliefs, their emotions, and their subconscious programming are constantly shaping their financial reality. They think they must work harder, do more, or sacrifice their well-being to achieve financial freedom. But the truth is, money flows most easily to those who expect it, those who feel at ease with it, and those who understand that wealth is a state of mind long before it is a physical reality. Your dominant feelings and beliefs around money dictate how much of it you allow into your life. If you constantly feel stressed about finances, if you worry about how you will pay your bills, if you doubt your ability to create abundance, you are holding yourself in a state of lack. The universe does not respond to your desires alone, it responds to your dominant state of being. If your dominant state is one of struggle, then struggle is what you will continue to experience. If your dominant state is one of ease, confidence, and abundance, then money will flow to you in ways you never expected. This is why gratitude is one of the most powerful tools for shifting your financial reality. Most people focus on what they lack, on what they do not have, on what is missing in their lives. This focus on scarcity keeps them trapped in a cycle of limitation. But when you shift your attention to what you already have, when you begin to feel grateful for the money that is already in your life, no matter how small, it changes your energy entirely. Gratitude amplifies abundance. When you appreciate what you have, you signal to the universe that you are open to receiving more. Start developing a deep sense of appreciation for every financial blessing in your life. Be grateful when money comes to you, no matter how small the amount. Appreciate the bills you are able to pay rather than resenting them. When you pay for something, instead of feeling like money is leaving you, feel gratitude for the fact that you had the money to spend. The more you appreciate money, the more money will flow to you. Another key aspect of allowing money to flow is trust. Many people block their own financial blessings because they do not trust that money will continue to come. They cling tightly to every dollar, afraid to spend, afraid to invest, afraid to enjoy what they have. This fear of losing money creates a resistance that stops more from coming in. True financial freedom is not just about having money, it is about trusting that money will always be there when you need it. When you operate from a place of trust, you make financial decisions with confidence rather than fear. You spend money without anxiety, knowing that more is on the way. You invest in yourself and your dreams, knowing that every dollar you put out will return to you multiplied.
And that was the last part of Neville Goddard's presentation. Tom, I wonder about how Goddard emphasizes the importance of emotion being the language of the subconscious and the centerpiece of causing reality to rearrange itself to reflect the person's state of being. It does imply that artificial intelligence can't interface with the subatomic and quantum levels in this way. It also implies those on antidepressant medication or some type of emotional suppressing treatment may also find limited results. Would you please talk about these concepts?
Yeah, so you're totally correct that AI, as it currently exists, it's, as I mentioned, it's just a fancy calculator. So it doesn't actually have emotions, and it doesn't even have convictions. It only has programming. There's nothing coming from the soul. You know, like when you have conviction, you feel something deep down, like from the heart, from the soul. An AI is a machine. It's a computer program. It doesn't have that. So there is actually no way that AI, as it currently exists, has any kind of Goddard-style reality manifesting abilities. And the more we ourselves become like AI, divorced from our own inner soul capacities to manifest, the more we will be trapped within a world of mechanical matter, unable to call upon our magical abilities to help us out of a bind. So that's a major risk that we're facing. Yeah,
definitely. Yes. Those on antidepressants, I know this is probably not an easy question to answer, but they may get short shrifted here too if they begin to take conscious control of their manifestation. I'm not sure about that, but I just wonder.
Thanks for reminding me because I forgot to address that. Yeah, you're totally right that people who are on, well, it's not just people on antidepressant medication. It's also people who have fried out their neurotransmitter receptors, you know, dopamine receptors on social media, short form videos. All these things that give you instant gratification over and over and over again, eventually you kind of become burned out and jaded, and your attention span drops to near zero. So, well, How does that relate to Goddard's technique? Well, in Goddard's technique, you need focused attention, emotion, and you need to have some level of conviction. And those three things are being decimated by modern social media and short-form video content. So yeah, I mean, there is a spiritual war happening on our spiritual power, and we have to be aware of it because it's on our phones. It's right under our noses. It's in our houses. And we have to practice a level of moderation about that to avoid losing our innate spiritual faculties. So specifically regarding people on antidepressants, this is an important point because when Goddard talks about his manifesting technique, he talks not only about feeling, he also talks about your root assumptions and your core beliefs, which are, you know, two sides of the same coin. So what that means, therefore, is that in theory, you can get away with manifesting without having all that much emotion so long as the very core or root of your being, and we're talking here about your subconscious, really, so long as your subconscious is invested in the idea. And there are other means than emotion of getting the subconscious to be in alignment with that. So one of those methods, for example, is this. I have had times in life where maybe I was daydreaming. I was kind of like looking at a wall, in a tranced out state, kind of dazing off, imagining something. And there really wasn't all that much emotion in it. But my entire being was involved in it. It was immersed in it. It was visualizing it. It was kind of going along with it. And it might have only lasted 20 seconds, but later that day, that very thing that I was sort of daydreaming about, it actually happened for real. I manifested it without a ton of emotion, only because my conscious mind was out of the way and I was sort of sunk down into the subconscious state, you know, through probably through an alpha or theta brainwave state, which is, you know, I mean, the regular waking brainwave state is a beta brainwave state. So anytime you go to sleep or you meditate or you take a nap and you kind of hover between waking and sleeping, your brain enters a lower frequency state, like in terms of actual oscillations per second. And in that state, you're closer to your subconscious than if you were in the beta brainwave state. So that is another way of reaching the subconscious, which is to change your state of consciousness to close the gap between your mind and the subconscious mind so that it is more receptive to your suggestions. So yeah, it can be done without emotions, but it's kind of like riding a bicycle with one flat tire. I mean, you can do it, but it's not optimal. So ideally, you would do exactly what Goddard says, which is you have both the emotion and the belief and the visualization, and those together create a very powerful effect. But if your dopamine receptors are burned out and you've got a bad attention span, well, maybe you can do it without emotion, but it'll be tougher.
I suspect there will be some challenges there. I'm thinking about some of these psychotropic and antidepressant medications, not all of them, but given what happened with the engineered pandemic and the enormous power given now to the pharmaceutical industry, could one aspect of spiritual warfare be masquerading as treatment for emotional traumas? It's something I think about, but let's go now to hear the beginning of another part of Neville Goddard's presentation.
Take a deep breath. Let go of every thought that ties you to the world outside. There is something I must tell you, something that will change your life forever. You have been searching, trying, hoping, and yet the one thing that holds you back is your inability to feel. You want to see proof first, to touch it, to grasp it with your hands, but this is not how creation works. The secret lies in your ability to assume, to believe, and most importantly, to feel that what you desire is already yours. Right now, I ask you, what do you want? Is it love, success, wealth, health? It does not matter, for all things are possible when you learn to feel. The moment you allow yourself to step into the reality of your wish fulfilled, the unseen forces move to bring it into form. You do not need permission from the world. You do not need to beg, to struggle, to chase. You only need to shift within, to accept without resistance that your desire is already yours. Tonight, before you sleep, I ask you to do this. Enter that drowsy state, that quiet moment before dreams take over, and imagine yourself living the life you desire. But do not just see it. Feel it. Feel the warmth of love if you seek companionship. Feel the joy of success if you desire wealth. Feel the ease of health if you long for healing. Hold on to that feeling until it becomes natural, until it feels like home. Release it. Walk in faith. Do not search for signs. The world must follow what you have already accepted as true. You are the creator, the architect of your own destiny. When you feel something is real, it is already done. There is a hidden force within you, one that has been overlooked, dismissed, and misunderstood. It is not found in effort, struggle, or force. Yet it has the power to shape your reality, to turn your desires into tangible experiences. This force is feeling. You have been taught to believe that hard work, persistence, and external actions are the primary tools for success. You have been told that if you want something, you must chase it relentlessly, work tirelessly, and fight against the odds. But what if I told you that the secret is not in effort, but in knowing, in assuming, in feeling your desire is already fulfilled? This is the key that unlocks the unseen and brings it into form. Right now, think of the one thing you truly desire. Perhaps it is financial abundance, a loving relationship, vibrant health, or success in a chosen field. Whatever it may be, notice how your mind instinctively calculates how it will come, how long it will take, or whether it is even possible. This is the conditioning of the physical world, a world that demands proof before belief. But creation does not work this way. The truth is the reverse. Believe first, and the proof will follow. Everything you have in your life right now is a reflection of past assumptions and dominant feelings. You did not consciously struggle for every single thing you possess. Much of it came naturally because, at some level, you felt it was yours. The house you live in, the people you interact with, the circumstances you find yourself in, all of it was once an invisible feeling, a silent assumption, a state you occupied within before it materialized without. The mistake many make is trying to force a new reality while still feeling lack, doubt, or desperation. They visualize wealth while feeling poor. They affirm love while feeling lonely. They work hard but carry the underlying belief that success is difficult. This contradiction keeps them stuck, for it is not the thought alone that manifests, but the feeling behind it. Feeling is the substance of creation. It is the energy that molds reality. You must learn to assume the feeling of already having what you desire. When you close your eyes and imagine yourself living in the fullness of your wish fulfilled, do not merely see it. Feel it. Feel the peace of abundance, the security of success, the joy of love. Let it sink into your being until it feels natural, until it no longer feels like a dream, but a memory. This is not daydreaming. This is creation. The moment you accept a feeling as true, reality begins shifting to match it. You may not see changes immediately, but the unseen forces are already at work. Stay faithful to this new feeling, walk in it, speak from it, and most importantly, rest in it. Do not let the outer world deceive you. Circumstances do not matter. Only your inner state does. If you persist in the feeling of your desire fulfilled, the world must conform. It has no choice. For feeling is the secret, and what you feel, you become. Your imagination is the foundation of your reality. Everything you see, touch, and experience in the physical world first existed in the unseen realm of thought. But it is not merely thinking or wishing that brings these things to life. It is the assumption that they are real, the feeling of their truth, that causes them to manifest. Your imagination is not a place of idle fantasy. It is the workshop of creation. The reality you live in today is the direct result of what you have imagined, and accepted as true in the past. Whether you were aware of it or not, your dominant assumptions shape the course of your life. The relationships you have, the money in your account, the opportunities before you, all of it is a reflection of your inner world. If you wish to change what you see, you must first change what you imagine and feel to be real. Many people believe they are victims of circumstances, but nothing in your external world has power over you unless you accept it as true. The outer world is a shadow, a reflection of your internal state. If you persist in the assumption of lack, struggle, or rejection, your world must mirror that experience. But if you dare to assume and feel the reality of abundance, ease, and love, then your world must shift to reflect that new assumption. Feeling is the bridge between imagination and manifestation. It is not enough to merely think about what you want. You must feel it as if it were already yours. The subconscious mind does not respond to words alone. It responds to emotion, to the depth of conviction behind the thought. If you imagine yourself wealthy while secretly feeling poor, your dominant feeling will win and poverty will persist. But if you assume the feeling of wealth, of security, or financial ease, even before a single dollar appears, the world must rearrange itself to make that assumption real. Your imagination is limitless, and so are the possibilities before you. Nothing is too big, too difficult, or too far beyond reach. The only limits that exist are those you place on yourself through doubt and disbelief. The moment you release these limitations and dwell in the feeling of your desire fulfilled, the world begins to shift. People, events, and opportunities move in ways you could not have predicted. Paths open where there were none before. What once seemed impossible becomes inevitable. The key is persistence. You must remain faithful to your inner vision regardless of what the outer world shows you. Do not be deceived by temporary appearances. The delay between assumption and manifestation is only an illusion meant to test your faith. If you continue to live in the feeling of your desire, without wavering, without doubting, then what you have imagined will harden into fact. Everything begins within. Your imagination creates your reality, and feeling is the force that brings it to life. Assume the best, feel it as real, and watch as your world transforms before your eyes. The world you see around you is not as solid or fixed as it seems. Everything that appears in your reality is merely a reflection of your past thoughts, beliefs, and assumptions. Your senses tell you that circumstances are real, that what is in front of you is all there is. But this is an illusion. The physical world is not the cause of your experiences. It is the effect. The cause is within you. Most people live as though the outside world has power over them. They react to what they see, hear, and feel, believing that circumstances dictate their emotions, their actions, and their possibilities.
Well, okay, talk about needing to take responsibility for not only your actions, but also how the universe reflects back your circumstances. Our guest is Tom Montauk. His website, montauk.net, M-O-N-T-A-L-K.net. And we're talking about what might be going on at the quantum level of physics, when our intention and emotion interface with reality. Author Jenny Randles mentions in the synchronicity chapter of her book, Time Storms, something she calls homing objects. One of the stories is from American journalist Charles Fort. He writes about a wedding ring lost at sea that turned up years later, when the couple ordered a meal, and they found that the ring was inside the plated fish. The next story involves a woman who lost a roll of film containing emotionally significant photographs, and 2 years later, in a city miles away, she buys a new roll of film. This is 2 years later, and when that roll of film was developed, somehow the images from the missing roll of film were superimposed on the new roll of images. Her examples continue, and Randall's writes, quote, "Here you can get a sense of the emotional and motivational factors that may organize reality so that the right people are in the right places at the right time to bring about synchronicity." These personal accounts, and there are more, again, point to the power of emotion that caused a shift in our time and space reality. I suspect Neville Goddard was also aware of these types of anecdotal evidence. Continuing with the role human emotional energy can have on the influence of our reality, what might be happening with emotional energy interacting with the waveforms on the quantum level?
Well, the quantum level is precisely the key to how this can all work, because it's been shown in quantum physics that what's called retrocausality it's definitely possible. And what that means is that something that you do right now in the present can go back in time and influence things in the past in order to change things back in the present, and therefore also the future. So the thing about emotional energy is that unlike physical energy, like from a battery or from the sun, emotional energy, it exists on what the occultists call the astral plane. And some of it also filters down into what they call the etheric plane, which is right next to the physical plane. Well, these other planes, they are not locked into linear time like our physical energy is. It actually, it's kind of fuzzy. It kind of bleeds into the future and into the past. It's non-local. It's delocalized. So because that emotional energy and the demiurge and the soul and that consciousness energy field, because it extends also through time, not just through space, but it can extend into the past, it can influence little switch points or switches or flip points in the past. You know, it can be weeks ago, months ago, years ago, centuries ago. It can influence those little tiny things so that because of that, the effects of that ripple back into the future and change the present as you know it. Well, okay, so it doesn't change the present that you remember so much. What it does, though, is it changes the probabilities, the shapes of the wave functions in the present so that the future that comes at you now, your experiences that you attract, they're different now. They're going to be shaped differently because the past has changed in a way that affects it. So, like, for example, the woman who found her missing ring inside of a plated fish, well, maybe her desire to get the ring back was so strong and sustained over such a long period of time that it actually affected the past in such a way that the ring, maybe instead of falling down a sewer grate, it fell down a different one, okay? And it found its way to the ocean and therefore got swallowed by a fish, and the right fisherman just happened to pick it up and eventually, you know, get it delivered as a meal on her plate. And all of that only happened because of one little tiny quantum switch that got flipped, let's say a couple months earlier, that led to that particular fish swallowing it and it ending up on her plate. So that's what I mean by emotion being non-local and affecting the past. That this is all in accordance with the allowed possibilities of quantum physics. And the math and the experiments actually prove that it's possible. So it's not that outlandish. But I must remind people, of course, that quantum physics, as I mentioned, is only the last step in a sequence of processes that ultimately originate in the higher metaphysical planes. So that's why we can also think about the explanation as the dream metaphor, which is not just a metaphor, it's actually probably the way things really work, where if you're in a dream and something happened earlier and you wish to get it back somehow, like you lost your ring in a dream, well, suddenly in the dream, you're eating a fish and there's the ring inside the fish. It makes sense in a dream because, like, hey, you know, anything can happen in a dream. Well, waking reality is not that much different from a dream. It's just a little bit more stubborn, more persistent. Things take longer to manifest, but they eventually do if you put enough energy and time into it.
Well, do you have any last thoughts on this very complicated but fascinating topic?
Definitely. Yeah, there were three other important points I wanted to mention. So the first one is, When Neville Goddard says, you know, use this technique to manifest your desires, well, we also have to question where those desires come from, because as everyone knows, we have a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other shoulder. So, you know, we're dual beings. We have desires coming from different places within our psyche. And so we have to make sure that if we do use this technique, that we are manifesting from a good place. We're manifesting from a place that actually resonates with our heart, our soul, and is in line with our conscience. Because if it's not, you know, if it's coming from a place of ego or shadow or pain or, childhood abandonment, alienation issues or something, and you're driving it with negative emotions, that's black magic, and it's going to backfire on you. So just make sure you come from a good place when you do it. That's one. The other point is make sure that it's not just about feelings. It's also about your core beliefs and your core assumptions, like your outlook on life. Now, some people have a viewpoint that, let's say, different kinds of programs that are lodged in their subconscious, one of which is money is dirty, you know, or I'm not worthy of a good relationship. These things that are lodged in the subconscious, and they're put there through painful, traumatic experiences in life that the ego and the shadow they build up a defense mechanism against it by saying like, I hate all women. I don't need women anyway because they're all, fill in the blank. That sort of thing. Well, if you then later in life try to manifest a loving relationship, but you have these time bombs within your subconscious, these booby traps, well, those are going to sabotage your manifesting attempts because they're going to be there, but they're going to be unacknowledged. And if you do get results, those results are going to be mixed because your subconscious is then not only enacting your conscious desire, but it's also going to be enacting those other things in your subconscious that might be conflicting with it. So let's say you might attract a romantic partner, but they might abuse you, take advantage of you. Why? Because they don't think you're worthy and they don't respect you. Why? Because you attracted someone that is resonating with your subconscious issue of not being worthy, of being full of insecurity. So that's why you do have to kind of clean up your soul as much as you can, heal yourself, do inner work, get yourself in a better, more balanced state. And that then works with any of the other more positive feelings that you put into your manifesting practice. So that's point number two. And the last point, I mean, technically, you don't even need to do a specific technique or ritual, okay? You can just be a certain way 24/7, just be a certain way and sustain that, and reality will start realigning with that. And so the reason why I mention this is because if you're only ever about, I got this desire, let me try to manifest this and that. Well, if you only do that, then you can run into the issue of maybe becoming a little bit too greedy or materialism obsessed and, almost being like a sorcerer trying to bend reality to your will, to your little every little whim. The ego can get really puffed up by that, and that can lead to other problems down the line. So another way to approach it then, therefore, is to not really focus on any particular desire about the future, but just hold a particular mindset or vibe or emotional feeling or outlook in the present moment, which is where all the power is. You just hold that in the present moment and just be that naturally as long as you can all day long, and that in itself will attract corresponding experiences. So for example, if you're someone who decides that, you know what, I'm just going to be a person who just focuses on the feeling of wonder and awe. Like everything is amazing. The universe is amazing. Amazing. Life is full of magic. If you have that mindset and you just go about your day with that, you're going to start attracting the craziest, magical, awe-inspiring synchronicities and positive opportunities. Now, in my experience, it takes about 3 days for it to sort of start kicking in. It takes about 3 weeks for it to get really noticeable. And it takes about 3 months of doing this for it to become like mind-blowing, like you're Neo in the Matrix, bending reality. So if you sustain that over time, it kind of builds upon itself, builds momentum, and starts warping reality more and more. And that is because, unlike a nightly dream, as I mentioned, waking reality is sort of the same thing, but it's takes longer for things to work. So just be patient, keep at it, and if you don't want to do all the meditation, like Goddard-style techniques and which you might find ritualistic, you can just be a certain way and it'll still work. And that ties into one last bonus point, which is this, that it turns out that all of us are constantly manifesting. And so if you have a very boring, mundane, apathetic, materialistic mindset, you're going to be manifesting a life that is boring, mundane, and materialistic, where nothing magical ever happens. And so therefore, in that particular path, you might think to yourself, all this reality creation, Goddard stuff, that's BS. it doesn't work. I've never experienced it. But it turns out they are experiencing it right then and there because they are creating a life of non-magic. So it's important to realize that we are all doing it, and therefore we all have the power, and therefore we have to recognize that power, take control of it, and practice spiritual hygiene so that, as I mentioned, we spin up positive feedback loops and get ourselves individually and collectively onto a better and positive future.
Well, coming back to the idea of how those returning from near-death experiences issue this message from the other side is a wake-up call. And might it be similar to restoring a missing page in an operator's manual or a factory recall or maybe a Windows Service Pack update? Either way, it seems to be restoring a birthright ability for all of us to have a much more joyful personal experience with our life and to willfully ignore anything that takes you out of that internal alignment. Tom, it's been awesome having you on the show. Please remind listeners how to stay in contact with you and your important research.
So if you go to my website, montalk.net, M-O-N-T-A-L-K.net, I've got my contact info there. I've got tons of free articles, free ebooks. And if you go to x.com, Twitter, x.com/TomMontalk, just one word, you'll see my social media feed, and that's where I tend to post most of my content these days. So either one's good for me.
Great articles you post on X. Tom, you and Carissa had produced a multi-part podcast on manifesting and how reality works. Please tell listeners more about this.
Right. So my girlfriend, Carissa, and I, we put together this multi-part podcast series on manifesting, on reality creation, how reality works, all the nuances and anecdotes and cool stories to back it up that I can only allude to here. So anyone who wants to know more, who wants to get like a master class on how this stuff works, definitely check that out on my YouTube channel. It's called the Mind Over Reality.
And you have three books that you've written. Give us those titles, if you would.
Yes, I've got three books. The first one is called Fringe Knowledge for Beginners. You can also find that on Amazon. I have another book on the alien agenda called Discerning Alien Disinformation. And then I have one on, it's a very interesting book about alternative history and the bigger picture of what reality is and how historical events tie into it. And it's called Gnosis. It's called Alchemy, Grail, Ark, and the Demiurge. So, and you can find all these on Amazon's, and the first two books are free on my website, so anyone can download those and have a look.
Nice, very generous. Tom, thank you again for being on In Other News.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.